Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray, and with me as always is my co-host Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex. How's it going?
All right. What's up?
Oh, you know what? Life is good. I kind of been like lessening my internet use the past couple of days, because I had to. And that was quite all right because, you know what? I've discovered cooking. Not that I didn't cook before, but, you know, I made a homemade spaghetti sauce in my slow cooker. I made homemade from scratch tapioca pudding for the first time in my life which my teenager used. I spent more time with my teenager. I think I've walked a good probably 10 miles in the last 2 days, you know, and been doing a lot of reading and, you know, life is good. So tell me about some of the stuff that you've been getting done today or that you've been doing in your life.
Nothing. Just burning up the rest of my trees.
Ah, that'll keep you busy. But you're going to have to tell me more than that, please, there, Rex. Why don't you tell us about some upcoming shows?
I don't know. We've got part two Tuesday morning of, I'm not alive yet.
Well, we better hope a bolt of lightning strikes you soon, Rex, because like Frankenstein's monster, you need to rise. You need to be alive. All right. Well, anyways. So, well, yeah, I can imagine those giant trees definitely can be quite a challenge. Just be extra careful with the chainsaw. I had a grandfather who lost 2.5 fingers to a chainsaw, and an aunt who got a scar across one side of her face from a chainsaw. Hopefully you don't have as bad a luck as my family does with them.
Well, they took lessons from the Texas guy.
The South Carolina Chainsaw Massacre. That's what we'll be reading about next in the news. All right. So we actually have one carryover from a previous contest that actually has been carried over a couple of times. So unfortunately, because of me not feeling well, we weren't able to do this show last week. Then we go into the contest with the rights inspired by the artwork of Stephen Lurson, who I highly recommend. If anybody doesn't know his artwork, check him out. Very cool stuff. Then we have rights inspired by the poem Advice to a Prophet, which is a poem by Richard Wilbur. And when we get to that, I'll probably actually have you read the prompt poem, which I'll have at the bottom of the board. But, I'll wait until we get to that contest. But in the meantime, I'm definitely looking forward to delving into tonight's rites. And what do we got first, Rex?
Of Love's Lost by Eric Svensson.
All right. Sounds good. And we got a SoundCloud for that, so here we go.
Of Love's Lost, but not forgotten, nor forsaken. Catalog mind stashes secrets. Heart vault runs with revolt, for it drums the bongo, strums, thrums sheer muscle walls of riotous love. Mind annotates caution thrown to the wind. Stenographer reprimands such foolishness. Hush, crush, such outlandish behavior. Catalog mind mothballs, wild neurons fires just too explosive. Heart muscles expand, vein tributaries river raft, blood corpuscles. Still do when lost love's music echoes, ricochets off cathedral organ pipes, not forsaken nor forgotten rose windows, each treasured embrace an opus. Museology's cardiology recalls cloaked by love's monastic preferences, chronological order of two entwined composers' love remains deeply ingrained. End poem.
Great read and write there, Eric. Sorry that it took so long did I accidentally put that poem? No, I didn't. Okay, never mind. I put it in Late Night Poets. I don't know why I'm over at Speakeasy. No, you put it up. Yes, absolutely. Sorry it took us so long to get to that. Thank you very much. I'm glad you were inspired, and I'll comment further. But first, Rex, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
I guess this goes in furtherance of memory. Because it hits on the back end, musicology, cardiology, recall. The idea is that because it hits on chronological order of two entwined composers, love. The idea of, hey, everything gets stashed in the brain somewhere, and that note that brings it alive again gets the, as you hit the strum, sheer heart muscle walls, brings one back to life, so to speak, whether it's for something that's 300-400 years old or something just 20 years old. That memory still lingers within the, whether it's just the music itself or the words with the music, it matters not. It's what comes, what beats back into the swell of one's thoughts as they bite into that note of music itself. It never really goes away. The love is not really forsaken nor forgotten. It is still there because you have the chance to go back to it because it's still vivid. It's still alive. It's never truly gone until there is no more of anyone to not actually dig into it.
I like it. I like it. Amen to that, Rex. So well said there. This was from the contest with the Art of Solomith Wolfing, and I gave this one an HM. I could have easily given it higher, but I only get so many top three that I get to give. And, you know, it really spoke to me on the same idea. But it spoke to me. It has such brilliant imagery and metaphors, and to me was a wonderful write on taking chances on love, like the kind of love that creates the most beautiful music, but also that love of music. The way we are connected to each other and connected to emotions and the way that music represents those emotions. Heart vault runs with revolt, for it drums the bongo, strums, thrums, sheer heart muscle wall of riotous love. Mind annotates, caution thrown to the wind. Stenographer reprimands such foolishness. Hush, crush such outlandish behavior. You know, there are those who want to crush the spirits of those who love wild and freely, and those who you know, revel in the delights of music, you know, but don't let your spirit be crushed, that's for sure. Just absolutely an amazing write by Eric, and very well done. Oh, and I know what I wanted to say. When you get a chance, refresh your topic board page. Because when we get to the second contest, I put the prompt poem before the other ones with a note for you to read it. And the other thing is, and I should have mentioned this earlier, but I forgot, is I was thinking, you know what I really like? I like the way Afasiana does part sinner, part saint, when there's only two people, where the person that reads, the other person automatically goes into commenting. And it makes it flow so much smoother. So I was thinking maybe we could try to do things like when it's just two of us, like how Aphasiana does it. What do you think?
Maybe.
Oh, don't. Okay, fine. If you like the bumpy ride, we can continue on with the bumpy ride. We don't need to have anything go smoothly. Smart ass. All right. What do we got next, Rex?
Unbecoming by Ben Hart. Dream Eater, Undone. If the world is ending, do you think us creatives will bother? To create something no one will ever care about, to make something of the moment undone? I'd like to hear them sing their hearts out, drown in the quickening paint on burning canvas. I'd love for that moment blast to last. Unloved. Unloved? Why do you go unloved? If you have a choice, if you could run to them now and make them see the truth, why are you still here, anchored to the empty in your temple of thought, filled with a thousand versions of one dancer, feathered maelstroms, a changing maze? But if you're a cast iron anywhere, just push through the storm and find the one who spun it and love them, even if it hurts, even if it kills you, love them. Promise me that you will love them, and somewhere quiet in the crowd, the rest will figure itself out. Unraveling. I'm unnerved for every thought I cast out across this world, like pebbles that never slip beneath the rippling. I'm nervous to tell you I am a liar, that I am in love with more of you than I dare eulogize. I'm afraid what you'll make of me when I bare my chest and the thoughts are streaming down from my head. I'm upset that you say to me, that you say you see me, but that I can't feel it until you tell me with your eyes. And Paul.
Great read there, Rex. What a brilliant write by Ben Hart. I really like what the inspiration that he got from his chosen prompt, which of course as always is more than one, but he specifically wrote to prompts one and three, and then some inspiration of his own. And I gave this a silver because of its creative use of language and its strong emotional impact. I really felt like this is a heartfelt write on the deep connection between creativity and viewing love and emotions more deeply, even as the mind spins into madness. But it also speaks on the fear of rejection. The desire to be loved and yet the fear of rejection are so oftentimes in conflict with each other. And I really like this all the way through, but especially the second part, unloved. Why do you go unloved if you have a choice? If you could run to them now and make them see the truth, why are you still here anchored to the empty in your temple of thought, filled with a thousand versions of one dancer? Why do you fight against yourself? Why do you fight against love? And then I'm nervous to tell you I am a liar, that I am in love with more of you than I dare eulogize. I mean, that's a lot. I mean, to have to bear yourself like that and trust that the other person won't hurt you, it's just a very powerful and haunting thing to have to be faced with. So amazing write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Coming to an end. The middle does walk in fear, but it fits in that angle of fear. Do you go out as that unloved angle? And then the back end, the unraveling, also walks in the fear, because it's the thought of not finding what he's looking for in the eyes, where you can actually read someone through the mirrors of their soul, so to speak.
Yeah, Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. That comment you made when you talked about the first part, do you remember, was it from the 1980s? There was this song that was, I used it for an Art of Seduction intro one time. It was like this song about the world was being destroyed by like nuclear holocaust or something like that. And it was this guy and his girlfriend making love in the middle of the world ending, like just stopping to make love. It was like from the 1980s and it had a really catchy beat. And dang it, it's like on the tip of my tongue, but I can't think of it. But I think it was I Stopped the World or something like that. Oh, gosh. It'll come to me. It'll come to me at 5 in the morning or something like that when no one's around to hear my thoughts.
Okay.
And do you have any idea what song I'm talking about?
No, the only thing I think of is Please Stop the World, I Want to Get Off.
Ah, well, that would be a good one too, but that's not, nope, that's not the one I was thinking of. I'll have to look it up later, but yeah. And what do we got next, Rex?
Entranced and Enchanting and Visions. That was yours. By Jenny.
Okay. All right. Humbled by tall tales telling majestic trees as I reach for decorated branches, entranced by colorful neon leaves swinging like Tarzan, I take my chances. As I reach for decorated branches, realities decompose, staining my fantasies, swinging like Tarzan, I take my chances. Traveling down enchanting forestries, realities decompose, staining my fantasies, rainbows explode, polychromatic rain flows. Traveling down enchanted forestries, a luscious path shines as vibrant foliage grows. Rainbows explode, polychromatic rain flows, pouring down, enriching everlasting envisions. A luscious path shines as vibrant foliage grows, supplying all of nature's essential provisions. End poem.
Aldous reads, kind of like a trip. It's colorful. It does walk in the picture itself, and she does do it in Pantone, but the idea of swinging like Tarzan, I take my chances, and the repeating line is third in the second stanza. But it gives that idea of letting one's fancies fly in the moment because of the imagery shown.
It does, yeah. It does. I like that observation. But yeah, living in the moment, being so free and taking those chances, because, you know, really, if you think about Tarzan, and I have to admit there, Rex, there was a part of me that was really hoping that you go beat your chest and go, me, Tarzan, you, Jane. But, you know, maybe next time. But yes, I have to agree with you. It is a wonderful write on taking chances. Nice rhyme, wonderful imagery. I see she's been practicing her Pantone form, which is, you know, nice. I like to see when people become interested in forms. And a great write on the connection between the free spirit and nature. I particularly like traveling down enchanted forestries, a luscious path shines as vibrant foliage grows. You know, a luscious path shines as vibrant foliage grows really shows me somebody who sees the beauty and the light within the forest. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Spun by Scott Sharp. Propulsion, the tumbling of eyes, fire running through the skeleton's arms, scars of darkness ripped open by light like an elk standing on the ridge, frozen in the shadows of time, waiting on the bullet of the hunter, sleeping on the cloud, snowdrifts amongst the starfall, swimming in the blood of the universe. and poem.
Great read there, Rex. I tell you, Scott has such a talent for brevity. Just powerful lines. You know, this brevity to me speaks on the constant movement and rotation between life and death, and the connection and the process, a sense of balance between the two. Like an elk standing on the ridge, frozen in the shadows of time, waiting on the bullet of the hunter, sleeping on the cloud, snowdrifts amongst the star, fall swimming in the blood of the universe. I like how this speaks to me on the act of creation, on the act of the universe being created and waiting on that moment in which a new star is birthed or a new, I don't know. It speaks to me on life. It speaks to me on death. It speaks to me on creation and the elk standing on the ridge frozen in the shadows of time, I think to me is a wonderful metaphor for the whole idea that instead of living life, we are just waiting for that bullet, waiting for that hunter, waiting to fall, because we can't see beyond that. And so amazing, right, and very well done. And Rex, what kind of thoughts came to your mind while you were reading this?
Singular moments captured in time. Propulsion and tumbling of eyes. The speed of which things pass through the shadow of your gaze. Fire running through the skeleton zones. You can look at that as a comet trail blazing through the. As you put it, he's got the hunter up there, so you can hit the comet blazing through Orion, ripped open by the light, like an elk standing on the edge, frozen in the shadows of time. Again, reference to eyes, you're caught in the moment. The bullet of the hunter, as it passes through the hunter, you've got the bullet there, which is the comet. And sleeping on the cloud, imagination. Snow drifts amongst the star foil. That might be passing through that stage of time. We go through the twice a year. I can't remember the name of it now, but it's that part of our edge where we can watch starfall or meteor strikes, so to speak, coming down from the heavens, swimming in the blood of the universe, is watching all of that unfold.
I like that. Watching it unfold. Very cool. All right, what do we got next?
We've got Dreams of Fantasy by Seas Whisper.
All right, what a cool name. I like that, or moniker. Very cool. Dreams of Fantasy by Seas Whisper. I walk down roads that are colors transparent, a mystical dream of fantasy, sometimes illusions, a blend of abstract, vivid portrait, orange heat whirling like a whirlpool, yet dripping, trickling raindrops like tears reflecting on canvas, yellow sunburst mixed with red, like my thoughts, my subconscious, emotions emerge like a splashing, red-hot cinders, fiery cascades, Hades meets the underworld, rust-filled, ready splatter in a background, my soul reaches out, stars sparkling in amber-orange, infused, the painting is a deeper meaning, as a dream taken out of myself, to another dimension, heavenly skies, sapphire, a twilight zone in recession colors, orange planets shining as red moons, orbits, my tears falling like a trickling, the white canvas, a blur, mystical mirror, a prism of crystal. End poem.
Great reading. Well, this hits on the idea of getting drawn into that which you're viewing, the canvas, the idea of actually immersing oneself in the moment to bleed in that fantasy, because she hits on that a mystical dream of fantasy up top and also finishes out on the back end with that that sort of a blur, mystical mirror, a prism of crystal, the idea of readily letting your mind wander into the piece and just drifting within what you see itself, then offering up the thoughts that come emerging, like she hits on this red hot cinders, fire cascades, Hades meets the underworld, rust filled, stars sparkling in amber oranges and hues. The painting is a deeper meaning. That's where the thought of immersing oneself comes in, as that deeper meaning unfolds within your mind as your eyes set to the mood it creates.
Absolutely. You know, I really like that, and it's so true. You know, especially when it comes to abstract or surrealism artwork. I mean, all artwork, but there's certain artwork that really just speaks to my soul. And, you know, you delve into it and you get deeper and deeper into it, and you find, as you were saying, that connection, that deeper meaning. I have to say, Sea's Whisper is a new name to me. I'm very glad they are inspired. I'm looking forward to reading more of them. And I really hope that they're inspired for more of our contests for our shows. The imagery in this is so beautifully plucked from the artwork that you wouldn't even have to know this Stephen Larson's artwork in order to see it. You can read the words, their use of color and imagery, and you can see the colors and the shapes and the splatters and circles that are part of the artwork. This is wonderful imagery and metaphors and a great sense of movement. I really felt like the spacing they used, like how sometimes they had wider spacing, created a pause, and there really was certain word choices. And the centering of the poem that made it kind of flow like an arrow through the air. It had a strong emotional impact, and I felt it really danced all the way from the depths of hell to the whites of heaven, or not the whites, sorry, the heights of heaven, and how we go from the white canvas to those burning colors of emotion. Just an amazing rite and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Fingers That Paint by Tom Keller. It looks like the water spinning down the plug hole. Start thinking of bacteria and protozoa, those simple but complex organisms that once were the beginning of life. Now congregated as pathogens of danger, bright, hey, look out, ancient life here, swirling around and around, haunting us within our drinking water. Escherichia coli, O157H7, Salmonella, Campylobacter, Vibrio cholera, and Shigella spp, Cryptosporidin, and Gardia, Amoeba nigrera fowleri, non-tuberculosis, Mycobacteria are but a few. Who needs ghosts in life when we are haunted all the time by these wild, worldly organisms? We hunt the chameleon particles, seeking answers to dark matter and energy. We study the quarks and muons, their up and downs, their left and rights, all of which collide and splat themselves about our spaces. Each color, a particle, each splodge, a collision or happening. Perhaps each dash and dot, splash and splodge is a coincidence of life, like that uncanny happening that most of the time we accept. But then, those bright colors may, like the coral snakes say danger, These chance happenings are deliberately controlled by organizers, more complex organisms, and their narcissistic tools of fucked up mistakes we call evolution. When someone else spies their actions, it wasn't me, Gov. Yes, evolution. Not an easy thing to argue against without looking as if you're about to cut off your ear. The vibrational energy that emanates from canvas to gray matter is like a tortuous barbican cell of terrorism, ripping at the heart and mind, demanding attention that pulls you in like deep water over the side of bridges. I am blinded and enlightened in one flick of an eyelid and pump.
Bravo there, Rex. Wonderful read. I have to admit, I am very glad you assigned that one to yourself, because had you assigned it to me, I probably would have just thrown it right back at you anyways, because I think some of those $10 words would have had me tongue-tied. This is an absolutely brilliant and intelligent write to me. I love the sense of humor in "Now congregated as pathogens of danger bright. Hey, look out. Ancient life here swirling around and around, haunting us." I don't know. For some reason, I picture like a little amoeba or something, a little one-celled organism dancing with the top hat and cane going, "Hey, look at me, look at me." It also makes me think of how, you read like how people get all excited about bacteria found like on Mars, and they consider that life, but how easily they dismiss the life that is in within the womb. And I don't necessarily think that that's where Time Teller meant for my thoughts to go, but that is what it makes me think of, is how eager we are to claim every little thing as a life, a brilliant discovery, except for the lives that really matter. I'll try not to get too much on any soapbox, but, I really like the imagery on this all the way through. At first, I did kind of have to shift through it because there was a lot of scientific terms, and it was worth it, though. You know, it's one of those rites that is truly worth it to shift through it, to look at all the scientific terms, look at the message within the rite. And how he speaks on the irony, yes, evolution, not an easy thing to argue against without looking as if you are about to cut off your ear. The thing with evolution, though, is it's as much of a faith-based religion as any other faith-based religion, because of the fact that there is no proof. You have to have faith. You have to have faith that the world happened from a big explosion. But I really like the imagery in "to gray matter is like a tortured barbican cell of terrorism ripping at the heart and mind. I am blinded and enlightened in one flick of an eyelid." You know, isn't it? It's just a crazy thing that the world is. But I just thought this was a wonderful, thought-provoking write on creation versus evolution and the turmoil that pulls at the mind as we try to find meaning in life. So, wonderful write and very well done. And Rex, I would like to hear your thoughts.
Well, the first part is the disparity of thought between one angle towards another angle. The ease is of looking outward but ignoring that which is inward. And then the second walks into the picture itself, each color a particle, each spot a collision or happening. Perhaps each dash and dot, splash and splodge is a coincidence of life, that uncanny happening that most of the time we accept. But then those bright colors may, like the call snakes, say danger. These chance happenings are deliberately controlled by organizers, more complex organisms, and their narcissistic tools of fucked up mistakes we call evolution. Some of those fucked up mistakes we call evolution because we play God by wielding the magic of thought through the organisms themselves. Instead of coming up with a solution, we just make the damn thing worse. That's the fucked up angle of evolution, by making it something already badder than it already was. And then the ending, Yes, evolution doesn't need anything to argue against without looking as if you're about to cut your ear off. Again, cut your ear off or cutting your nose off to spite your face. Again, playing within the scope of that which you shouldn't, playing God, instead of actually hitting on the idea you note, you take care of, and you do what you can without actually modifying something to make it worse than it already is.
Amen to that. Great comment there, Rex, and so true. You know, oftentimes we make things far worse by trying to play God. So, very cool comment. All right, what do we got next?
Tangerine Pink Sunrise by Betty Page.
Splatter paint sunrise, dripping cool blue ocean waves, cascading from clouds, coral pinks ablaze, twisted in tangerine sun, sultry soft pastels, vibrant bright neon, Rio Cantina colors, flavors of the beach, sweet water colors, lush tropical radiance, juicy strawberry, tangerine sunrise, lemon yellow pineapples, exotic daydreams, emerald palm trees, Margaritaville islands, enchantment of stars, zooming high above, swirling in rainbow silk clouds, ribbons entwining, celebrating love, drinks in hand singing, romance windowside, times fading away, watch as tangerine twirls round Picasso paintings, surreal mysteries, Salvador Dali deserts, poetic sweet light, dining by the shore, waitress brings another round at happy hour, sunset deep in sea, cantina's crowd dances round, drifting in daydreams, and poem.
Very good. Now this is, I'll take this as that full-size painting. That one that covers the wall and is so vivid that you can actually walk into it, because she hits on that right up top. Splatter pink sunrise, dripping cool blue ocean waves, cascading from clouds. The idea of actually walking into the scenery, becoming the scenery itself and enjoying it. She rolls onto all of that, the tangerine sunrise and the yellow pineapples, and then actually sits down to him of that leavening, so to speak, drinks in hand, singing romance, windowside, time fading away, watches tangerine twirls around Picasso paintings, then walks into a little bit more with Dali and such. And it is about full immersion to the point of actually being part of the portrait itself.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. Yeah, I can definitely see that, the full immersion into the artwork. You know, I just adore Betty and adore the imagery that she puts in this poem. You know, I did notice in her AM that she mentions that part of this is a dedication to Jimmy Buffett and his way of life. And I can see that. I mean, this is so vibrant, gorgeous and vibrant imagery and metaphors. It really captures to me the energy of the artwork that was offered up in the contest, and truly a zest for life, and not only life, but for art, for music, for those things that taste and feel good, you know, for love and sex and all those things which just are filled with such, fill you with such a passionate ache. And I really like this all the way through, but especially celebrating love, drinks in hand singing, romance windowside, time fading away, watches tangerine twirls round Picasso paintings, surreal mysteries, Salvador Dali deserts, poetic sweet light. Just wonderful lines and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
The Mega Charter of Extrusion by Liquid Mind Forever. programs. Pastel, pixel, pigments, permeate, radiate, pulsate, procreate. Ooze, contuse, perfuse, snooze. Around, down, unbound, counterfeit. Prescriptions encrypted, G-scored over the additives. Sedatives for each treason. Easter, christening, Hanukkah, death. Step. Adept at unkempt contempt. Cosmogonic seizure, slip ripped from anesthetized grip of lower lip, hypnostic hell. Chartreuse. Amused, contused, abused, harmonic tonic, refuses to adhere. Excuses, clearly altered realities. Beer. Near sears, ear fears. Shears, leers, mirrors. Purple, pulchritudes, lacrimose. Toast. Burnt. Russets. Orphan celadon. Precambrian, a rest for ill rest, blessed. Among disorganized strokes of genius, haute couleur, the ultimate supernal mess.
Okay, there we go. Wonderful, wonderful read there, Rex. I see we have Hats on the board. Good to see her. Hi, Hats. Glad you're getting a chance to listen in. You know, I gave this one the gold. You know, I always tell people, and not that you... I always say for my break on through a contest that interpretations do not have to be literal. Feel free to experiment with language, imagery, and metaphor. And I really feel like that Liquid Mind has done that with this rite. First of all, on a technical level, great use of inner and end rhyme, wonderful use of alliteration. This just flows with brilliant imagery and metaphors, hard-hitting lines. I like how this speaks to me on the mind open to the creative brilliance within the mess of life, but it also has other things it speaks to me of, like when it says, you know, counterfeit prescriptions encrypted, chiarcurso addictive sedatives for each treason, Easter, Christian, Hanukkah, death, step, adept, and unkempt contempt. You know, it feels like people, you know, shoving those pills of contempt down you. You know, like if you dare to speak up, you need to be silenced with medication. You know, there's something wrong with you. I also learned a word I didn't know before, which was beer, which is B-I-E-R, which is actually the platform on which a casket is put upon during a funeral, oftentimes surrounded by candles. And it is in that moment of the mind's death where you know, all of a sudden the lights surround you and you see how much metaphorical death the world is filled with. I also like the use of the color chartreuse, which is like a really kind of like ugly purple-gray colored chartreuse, amused, confused, abused, harmonic, tonic, refuses to hear, excuses, clearly altered realities. You know, some people don't see beyond their own narrow visions. You know, they end up... bruising their own eyes, their attempts at swinging at other people. This really just has amazing wordplay all the way through and was a wonderful write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
She had to play with the voice. Magna Charta of extrusion. Think of the Magna Carta rolling off that angle. The end line out of the first stanza, ooze, contuse, perfuse, snooze, around, down, unbound. That's the thoughts of what's coming out of that picture itself. Then the prescriptions encrypted. There's a note. You could look at it as pills because some of this does look as they are pills in the moment. Chiaroscuro additives, the thought of blending light and shade together. And sedatives for each treason. Nice choice of words. Easter christening, Hanukkah death. Well, the sedatives for that could be anything one could think of, pills, booze, or anything else along those lines to get yourself out of it. Because she plays again on that note with this next stanza, the last line, from anesthetized grip of lower lip, hypnostic hell. The idea of you can go with hypnotic, or you can actually take it as what it's offering up as hypnostic, as in being a Gnostic, G-N-O-S-T-I-S-C, and the sort of hell, what one creates. Harmonic, tonic, it could be. It's a matter of how the cascading colors pop in your mind. Orphan Celadon, I like that. Precambrian, arrest for ill rest. I like that too. But the back end, blessed among disorganized strokes of genius. And she, again, plays with words. Haute couleur, instead of haute couture, she's going with haute couleur as in color, a spread. Nice touch. The ultimate supernal mess. And it does offer up that note. It is one hell of a bite at a mess. It's as though somebody...
Oh, absolutely.
A colorful angle of something with which to play with.
Yep, yep. I did like the wordplay, as you were mentioning, in the couleur, like the allure, the play of the words with color. And, you know, there's just so much to pick apart and really just dive into and enjoy. And so great observations there, Rex. Very cool. All right. What do we got next?
We've got Dripping Sugary Frost by Naomi Sarah. You got SoundCloud. And Allo Apps, how you doing?
All right, here we go.
Dripping Sugary Frost. Living two doors down from the corner store, the sun-baked sidewalk became our playground, while the railing of the store steps our merry-go-round. And all those candies in that store window are utmost childhood wonderland. The counter screamed in a riot of vibrant colors, sugar-covered fruit jellies, licorice of all sorts, juicy bubblegum, sour lollipops, and fizzy cola bottles, leaving our mouths aching and salivating with thoughts of sugary froth coating our taste buds while hummingly melting into our pink tongues. Now, my brother, Mr. Entrepreneur, would pick flowers from the neighbors' front yards, then ring their doorbells to sell them back for a few pennies. Well, of course, this one fatal day, the dear old lady across the street recognized the twiggy improvised bouquet. After giving us an earful, she called up our poor mother. And I swear, over those next few days, it wasn't our aching mouth the problem as much as a red behind.
Oh, I love that ending. That is so relatable. Thank you, Naomi. Wonderful read and write, and thank you for the SoundCloud. Just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Rex, your thoughts on Naomi's poem.
Hey, all was good until that last, but then again, hey, you pay for the sweeties, you pay for taking the flowers, and something's got to give, and it's always the red behind which smiles the whitest.
So true. Yep, that is so true. I love the fanciful way she went. I shouldn't say fanciful, nostalgic, the nostalgia of this. And you know, who can't relate to wanting those sweets those, you know, sugar-covered fruit jellies, licorice of all sorts, juicy bubblegum, sour lollipops, and fizzy cola bottles. I mean, it truly was a childhood wonderland. And, of course, you know, I think we can all empathize with the red behinds at the end. You know, it really took me back. I find it very relatable to the times I got into trouble with my siblings and my cousins. Although our trouble, since we lived in the middle of the woods, usually involved being gone for so long deep in the woods that, you know, we got in trouble when we got back. But, you know, I also, you know, you just have your inspiring, not inspiring, but, you know, those moments when you look back and you got in so much trouble, but you can't help but look back and just smile because, you know, it was just good times to be had, you know, a kind of a, like, you know, just, you know, something to share, a memory to share and laugh with your siblings and your about. And I really thought this was a delightful, wonderful imagery and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Elsewhere Knitting by Diane Hine.
Is it my turn to read?
Yep.
Okie dokie, Smokey. Just testing, seeing if you remembered. All right. The woman in the holy sweater draws yarn from the inside of her skeins. On finding havens in the hollows, she drops stitches every time. To her husband, she says, every hollow has breath. He reads, she knits. The slowly hollowing skein unveils a soft aqua nudibranch ruffling the indigo sea. She says, every hollow has a time. No reply. She knits. The next hollowed skein reveals a Tiffany supernova rippling the pinprick stars. She says, nothing cannot be. He looks up at her. He looks up at last. His wife is a pointillist painting, every dot jiggling. So holding his place in the book, with one finger, he replies, I agree, and poem.
A bite at reality. I like that. Knitting in their own views of thought in the moment. Hers within the sweater, his within the book. And, hey, you know, he probably didn't hear everything, but why not? I agree at the back end as a note to an agreement, because you can't argue with somebody who's holding knitting needles and could use them as a weapon if she so chose.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. I did give this one the bronze. I thought the imagery metaphors are wonderful. Great observations there, Rex. Yeah, you really can't argue with a woman with a knitting needle. But I really liked how she used the spacing within this. And I never got into knitting myself, but my mother is really big into knitting and crocheting. And she used to be able to just do it and watch TV and, like, not even pay attention hardly to what she was doing. It just came to her like second nature. You know, the way that Diane has put the spacing in this poem to represent the spacing, and I like how it's as if somebody's knitting with this multicolored yarn, that each section of the yarn represents something new. I thought this was a beautiful and thoughtful write on purpose found within silence and energy found within emptiness. But just an amazing write and very well done. And what do we got next?
Vortex by Weaver of Dreams. Dare I close my eyes and sleep again? For in the darkness is a depthless vortex. What the threat can be is still unknown. I always wait before the journey ends. Though each time I whirl wildly within, I sense a virulent evil comes ever nearer. Is it a ghost? Does a demon lurk below? A dreaded vampire, perhaps a dark fae? It cares not for me, of this I am aware. Should I appease or ignore it, I am sure, unsure. Then the entity tries to cleave to me, and hitherto unknown instincts come to my aid. I conjure up a fiery spear, hurl it true and fast. The darkness screams, implodes, and is no more. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. What a wonderful write by Weaver of Dreams. I really like how her imagination, where her imagination took her for this particular prompt painting that she chose, which actually does, like, it really does look like leaves or something swirling in a vortex or fish within an ocean wave. I mean, there's so many different things that you could think of it being, and it does have that sense of movement to it. This is beautifully written couplet, and I like how in only a few lines she tells a story on hunting and something, an evil entity released from this vortex. And, you know, I feel like this is the moment of face down between the hero, the heroine, and the villain. You know, is it a ghost? Does a demon lurk below, a dreaded vampire, perhaps a dark fae? It cares not for me. Of this, I am aware. Should I appease or ignore it? I'm unsure. And then the ending is so epic. I conjure up a fiery spear, hurl it true and fast. The darkness screams, implodes, and is no more. You know, really, for not a very long write, it's quite epic in the way that it shows that moment where good faces off with evil. So wonderful write and very well done. And you okay there, Rex?
Yep.
Okie dokie. Well, and your thoughts?
Well, while she hits it with that first right up top, dare I close my eyes and sleep again? That vortex is the mind not ready to sleep, the whirling imagination and the things conjured within that sphere in the moment. The vortex offers up that note of everything that swells, that twirls in the moment, whether it be the demons, the dreaded vampire, the dark fae. It doesn't really matter. They all come mashing up together because they are a swirling mess in the mind at that point, because the body wants to sleep, but the mind will not let it go because it's an ever-blooming demonstration of the imagination that runs wild.
I like that. I like that. You know, and that's actually a really great observation and gives me a new way to look at the poem, the whole idea of facing our own fears and fighting against the going process of going to sleep for fear of the nightmares that we'll face. You know, so very cool. All right. And what do we got next, Rex?
We have Dots in a Tunnel by Jen C. John.
Eye floaters were dots. Flow up and down waves, mosquitoes scratch my nose. Oh boy, paint splash. My iris were blue, splash like water, the midnight sky, centering a cloud. Pink, red, purple drops, colored in the white pathway, round flows and circles covering the light blue sky. House fly was watching, waiting to find food. Dead mosquito, lifeless, a creative painting. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I like the startness, eye floaters. Everybody gets those now and then. And to dip into that and roll into the picture itself is a different view. The thought of, and then the delivery of what comes out of that, the mosquito scratched my nose. Housefly was watching, waiting to find food, dead mosquito, lifeless, a creative painting. and a creative way of looking at that which was in the painting itself by playing out the angle of the dots in the tunnel, the eye floaters, because that's hit on a pink, red, purple drops, colored the white pathway. Again, reflection of eye floaters, round flows and circles covering the light blue sky interpretation of the color of her eyes. So nicely done. Something a little different.
It is nicely done, and great comment there, Rex. I have to say, this one really made me smile. I felt there was a sardonic bite to it, especially with the mosquito scratch my nose, oh boy, paint splash, and waiting to find, a housefly was watching, waiting to find food, dead mosquito, lifeless, a creative painting. I mean, you can imagine this artist painting this picture, and along comes, you know, the spider, the fly, the mosquito, you know, and all these other distractions of life, the itchy nose that causes those splashes, those splatters, until you have a Jackson Pollock-type painting. And there was, to me, this kind of humor within this rite, you know, and speaking on the kind of almost accidental flamboyancy of the creative process. I really like that the use of the imagery in here, and where it says pink, red, purple drops colored the white pathway, round flows and circles covering the light blue sky. And I do like how it talks about the floaters. I don't know, it's just very creative. It's definitely quite a trip and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Advice to a Prophet by Richard Wilbur. When you come, as soon you must, to the streets of our city, mad-eyed from stating the obvious, not proclaiming our fall, but begging us, in God's name, to have self-pity. Spare us all word of the weapons, their force and range, the long numbers of that rocket, the mind. Our slow, unreckoning hearts will be left behind, unable to fear what is too strange. Nor shall you scare us with talk of the death of the race. How should we dream of this place without us? The sun mere fire, the leaves untroubled about us, a stone look on the stone's face? Speak of the world's own change, though we cannot conceive of an undreamt thing we know to our cost. How the dreamt cloud crumbles, the vines are blackened by frost. How the view alters, we could believe. If you told us so, that the white-tailed deer will slip into perfect shade, grown perfectly shy, the lark avoid the reaches of our eye, the jackpine lose its knuckle grip on the cold ledge, and every torrent burn, as Xanthus once in gliding crouch, stunned in a twinkling, what should we be without the dolphin's ark, the dove's return? These things in which we have seen ourselves and spoken, ask us, prophets, and we shall call our nature's force when that live tongue is all dispelled, that glass obscured or broken, in which we have said the rose of our love and the clean force of our courage, in which beheld the sleeping locus of the soul unchilled, and all we mean or wish to mean. Ask us whether with the wordless worldless rose our hearts shall fail us, come demanding whether there shall be lofty or long-standing, when the bronze annals of the oak tree close. End poem. Death. Sorry about that.
No need to apologize. You know, I mean, it was a cold read. I thought you, as always, you did absolutely listening to your voice is always a treat. And you did a wonderful read of that. This is the prompt poem. I ran a contest. I believe it was an 8-spot-only contest. It might have been more, but I think it was 8 spots. I really like Richard Wilbur's poetry. Anybody who hasn't read him, I highly recommend checking him out. You can you know, just Google his name and poetry, or you can find him on the poetryfoundation.org. I saw this poem and I thought, I want to see, and I might do more contests with some of his other poems, but I like to take an individual poem and tell people they can be inspired by any part or the general vibe. And this one particularly spoke to me, and I wanted to see what people got because, you know, I see within the first part how the use of words to bring with used with anger to bring fear to people and the fear to bring control. I really like even the title, Advice to a Prophet. Like a prophet is always giving advice, but do they stop to take advice? Especially if you think about it, the false prophets and the you know, the naysayers of the world. I really like how he brings in the nature imagery with, if you told us so, that the white-tailed deer will slip into perfect shade, grown perfectly shy, the lark avoid the reaches of our eyes, the jackpine lose its knuckle grip on the cold ledge, and every torrent burn as Xanathu once its gliding trout stunned in a twinkling. What should we be without the dolphin's arc, the dove's return? You know, what would we be without nature? What would we be without embracing that which has been for all time and will always be? You know, just a wonderful, thought-provoking write. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. What did you think of this, though? What did you think of this poem?
Rolls on the thought of war. When you come, as you soon must, the streets of our city, mad eyes from stating the obvious, not proclaiming our fall, but begging us in God's name to have self-pity. Calls on that idea to, we're expected to bend to the will in the moment, and that note of the weapons and the circumstance, unable to fear what is too strange. Why should we fear you and what you have? You're here to kill us in the first place. And the world's own change, though we cannot conceive, the idea of moving on to something else besides the angle and the need in war in itself. And then the thought of in that next stanza, the white-tailed deer, the lark, and the jackpine, destruction of land, and the thought of dolphins are going to does return one day of peace and maybe a bit of happiness.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. And the back end, ask us whether with the world of rose, our hearts shall fail us, come demanding whether it shall be lofty or long-standing when the bronze annals of the oak tree close. The idea of maybe the world ending at that point in time, who you ask when there's nothing left to ask of.
I can see that, yeah. The like you were saying, the whole idea of nothing more to hold on to. Huh. Very cool. Very cool. I like that. You know, it actually, the part about the dolphins made me think of the book So Long and Thanks for All the Fish by Douglas Adams, which is a part of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series. I can't help it. As soon as I see anything about dolphins, that's immediately what I think of. So Long and Thanks for All the Fish. But what do we got next, Rex?
Careful by Scraps and Scribbles.
I used to think that I didn't make myself clear. Now I know that your fingers are too clumsy, fat, and careless to thumb through me. I am not to be understood by the careless. That's how I'll know, I think, how I'll know real love. It'll be the one who reads me. carefully I'll run out of pearls, long before the world out of swine. I'll put jewelry on pigs no more. End poem.
I like the back end of that. That's funny.
That is great.
Yeah, but lipstick on a pig is still a bloody pig. Oh, I like that. But the first half, but it kind of hits on that being the book itself. I used to think that I didn't make myself clear. That hits on the idea of you're not actually reading the story, you're just rolling through it. That's your fingers, that's too clumsy, fat, and careless, just come through me. I am not to be understood by the careless. Again, that note, hey, if you're going to pick me up to read me, at least understand what is coming forth within the voice itself. And then that vengeance, that's how I'll know, I think, how I'll know real love. It'll be the one who reads to me. A different take. The back end, maybe in the taking of the book itself, you can offer, hey, maybe if you actually read the book to the book, you might take a bit more in as opposed to just reading for reading's sake without actually garnering anything from the story.
That is so true. And I like how this can be taken on that metaphorical or literal level. Like, you know, sometimes we read, but we don't really take time to absorb what we read. And I did like the bite in that end line, which speaks on the idea of casting pearls before swine. You know, like the idea of, you know, don't share your wisdom with people who aren't going to be listening to it. But because this poem also speaks on finding real love, finding that person who truly understands and accepts you for who you are, you know, I couldn't help but also think at the end with the I'll put jewelry on pigs no more of the, you know, Kermit the Frog and Miss Piggy, and how on the Muppet Show she was always chasing him around. But this is great, you know, and I like that he comes into that moment of, now I know that your fingers are too clumsy, fat, and careless to thumb through me. I am not to be understood by the careless. You know, it truly is just an amazing rite on the revelation that some people will never understand the depths of the soul expressed. So this is definitely an excellent rite and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Neutered nuclei or activated agrandizement by Eric Spencer. Never wish away thoughts that come to sway, play, and ply in your mind. Be kind. Welcome these energy pockets into your heart. Why do these intruders cause you to start? Examine the energy's intention. Thoughts want to be held in detention. Be a good host to these sudden, uninvited energy ghosts. All creation is energy synergy. So too are your thoughts. You ought never to forget this. Once the thought rocket has landed its energy pocket in your midst, examine the resulting mists. Then, exercise the greatest gift given to you, for it's the sacred, immutable clue. Thought power can create lasting flowers or a deluge of demented distress. With destructive thoughts don't mess, examine, assess, undress the energy's essence. What postulates? Purity or putridness? Choose well. Exercise your birthright. That is your soul's blessed mentioned might. Does the energy pocket appear to be an angel of light, or is it an angel of light? The latter bids to stay. The former surely you must slay. And boom.
Great read there, Rex. Is your doggie playing with their food dish or something?
No.
Oh, okay.
She's just pattering around.
I thought I heard some pitter-pattering type noise in the background.
What do you want?
She's demanding. All right. Well, I really like this one. I gave this one the gold in the contest, which was an 8 spots contest. really amazing imagery and metaphors. And I like how this took a positive approach to the prompt, and how we have this choice. We can have this positive energy and be kind and be loving, or we can be that destructive with our word choices and our thoughts, and we can sap other people of their energy. Really just an amazing write on the choice we have in life to send out either that negative or that positive energy. And that is what we share with other people. And I really like this all the way through, but especially where it says, choose well, exercise your birthright that is your soul's blessed sentient might. Does the energy pocket appear to be an angel of light, or is it an angel of light? The latter bid to say, the former, surely you must slay. Just a wonderful right all the way through, and very well done. And now that Miss Thing is done demanding your attention, what are your thoughts, Rex?
By that, be careful what you wish for and what you dip into. Put that note to the end. What was it, the second, the last two lines thought? Does the energy pocket appear to be an angel of light, or is it an angel of light? That's a question in a double thought of angel of light. Does it appear? Is it seemly? Or is it just you misinterpreting? So the idea of actually interpretation of thoughts that actually walk through, whether you dip into the light itself, or are you only thinking that you're dipping into the light?
I like that. I like that. Very cool observation. Very cool. What do we have next?
To a Sage by a Jesmus Bajon.
All right. And let me just post that. And then I will click, and here we go. Clad in orange clothes like the sunset, or in white clouds like the fluffy clouds, or white clothes like the fluffy clouds, with the sword to take trial on debt, march to the streets of our city grounds, burst flames on the wicked from thine mouth, frothing smoke from the burning flames, aim at those starting the troubling clout, stand by those advocating the dames. Thou instructed to perform societal law, written in scrolls by sages before thee, turning sticks to snakes to aim claw, teeth gnashed at the ravishing sea. Eye for an eye, tooth for the tooth, both are dead, rest conquered by thee. Thou built a solace empire of round booth, golden chambers to thine throne be, ravishing dames, coveted from marriages, leaving the broken, bitter, and anguished, sorrowful tempest fleeing their cages, seeking peace for a dignity tarnished. Lift us, O sage, from the bounty of debt, lessons repeating to punishing our past of ignorance. We have eared times to fret, no memory to pay the price for the last. End poem.
Great read. I don't know. This has a something to... that second last stanza has me wondering if this isn't about arranged marriages. And, well, they're still doing that in this day and age. But as the world has moved on past those needs to arrange for the good of two countries, two cities, two towns, whatever you want to... think about it for the benefit of both. Those times have long gone. I'm wondering if that is part of what's in that second to last stanza, seeking peace for dignity tarnished. The idea of now that you've got people willing to take up the fleeing those arrangements. Don't know, but wondering.
I like that thought, though. Yeah, I can definitely see that because, you know, stand by those advocating the dames, thou instructed to perform societal law written in scrolls by sages before thee, turn six to snake, six to aim claw. You know, there is this idea of socially controlling, and which is mention of dames, you know, women, the idea of the society's control of women and of marriage, and how, you know, we've moved forward so much in the ideas of people making choices for themselves. Eye for an eye, tooth for the tooth, both are dead, rest conquered by thee. Thou built a solace empire round booth, golden chambers to thine throne be. I feel like those lines pay a tribute to a savior like Christ Jesus, or perhaps another or savior, or a way of thinking, living through acts of love, rather than living by an Old Testament religion of law, where, you know, that states an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Perhaps it is learning to live in a world that embraces the idea of love. You know, I just really like how this has, you know, powerful imagery and metaphors and a spiritual message. And I really felt like that there was a part of this that spoke on the idea of seeking peace in a tarnished world. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And what do we got next?
Turn Left at the Teapot by Ken Smith. Giant bent stainless steel tea kettle in the sprawling downtown of Canada's capital, perhaps left behind by Jack and the Beanstalk, abandoned so long an evergreen tree has planted its roots and blossomed, summer wildgrass sprouting from its spout. For everyone to enjoy, even on a frigid winter day, for the old bag lady, her carry cart wobbly, with the one crooked wheel falling asleep next door at a table at Starbucks after wandering snowy sidewalks all night. And boom.
Great read there, Rex. A wonderful write by Ken. I'm always glad when he's inspired. I love his use of everyday imagery. Yeah, I think it's funny. You know, Ken apparently in the city he lives in or used to live in or maybe visited, you know, they have a statue or, you know, an art piece of artwork of a tea kettle. Now, I used to live in Superior, Wisconsin, and I worked and had a lot of my appointments for doctors and stuff like in Duluth, Minnesota. And right outside one of the clinics in Duluth, Minnesota, is a sculpture of a dancing naked family, a mother, a father, and three children dancing in a circle, completely naked. So while Ken gets to write, turn left at the teapot, perhaps I ought to write, turn right at the dancing naked family. I think that would be a good idea. I might just do that and give him credit for the inspiration. I really like how the imagery that he puts in this, for everyone to enjoy, even on a frigid wintry day, for the old bag lady, her cart, carry cart, wobbly. So this isn't just about the imagery of the artwork and the way that the artwork represents the town. But I really liked this because to me, sculptures are such a fascinating part of the history and personality of so many towns and cities. This had great imagery and metaphors and was a write on how too often people will notice the art but not the person suffering beneath it. So amazing write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, he offers it up as observational, But by the time you draw down to the back end of this, it's sardonic in its effort of deliverance, because you look at the teapots and the buildings surrounding it. So you're looking at what was, say, $10, $15, $20 million of sculpture, which could be best served taking care of that old bag lady on the street.
And all the other homeless people. That is a great observation. So true.
It might look shiny, it might look bright, it might look good to those coming into the city, but it ain't that way to those who are living on the street.
Amen to that. That is so true. You know, to the person who is suffering and starving, you know, it is nothing. It offers no food, no warmth, no comfort. You know, so really great comment there, Rex. And what do we got next?
Hyde Park Corner Prophets by Gronwy.
Proclaiming
today.
Feed me, Seymour. All right, is it my turn to read?
Yep.
Okie dokie. I did remember that. Proclaiming.
It should be proclaiming.
Okay. It is proclaiming. Okay. Okay. Proclaiming a philosophy from a soapbox on wheels, every Sunday morning enjoying hecklers' catcalls, preaching doom and gloom at the end as the end is nigh, a prophet of old times without a social media team, his followers footsore from trekking in his trail, handing out pamphlets to tell the truth to you, calling religion evil for making divisions in faith, shouting out those who want to save souls are fake, a vision for the world of all people holding hands. It's not a new idea for us to understand, finding false icons made with guns and revolutions, a beret with a star, read books of hopeless words, found in dogmas of beliefs of rewritten histories, shouting, you don't want to know the truth, and poem.
I like the satirical notes in that one.
yeah.
That was a sardonic bite at the fact, you think we haven't heard this diatribe before? Oh, you think rewriting those notes to what is and what isn't this, that, or the other thing makes a bit of difference to the reality of what that thing really is? Come on now. No, we don't want to know the truth, because you can't rewrite something which was shit to begin with, has no meaning or bearing except to control. So you want to preach, go ahead and preach. Doesn't mean anybody's got to listen to your ass.
Right, exactly. And you're right, this does have a great sardonic bite to it. This actually makes me think, me and my daughter went for a walk the other day, and there was this young kid wearing a suit, and a lot of times you see like Jehovah's Witnesses or Mormons, especially when they're knocking door to door, they'll wear like a specific kind of suit. And I happened to mention to my daughter, I was like, hey, I think that guy's Mormon. And as we were crossing the street, we happened to both look down at his shoes. He's wearing this three-piece black suit with a pair of pink, those shoes that have holes in them. Suddenly I'm blanking out on what those are called. But you know
pink
what I'm talking
what?
About?
Pink what?
The shoes. The shoes that have holes in them. He was wearing these pink sandals. He was wearing a three-piece black suit. Yes, that's
Crocs.
That. Yes, Crocs. He was wearing a three-piece black suit with a pair of pink Crocs. And my daughter turns to me after we got by and said, do Mormons always wear pink Crocs? And I had to crack up laughing. So it's like, no, that was not expected. That was a complete side note tangent of mine, just because that's what Geronimo's poem made me think of. But I thought this was amazing imagery and a powerful rite on the way religion destroys individual faith and brings forth a world of violence. A vision for the world of all people holding hands is not a new idea for us to understand. Finding false icons made with guns and revolutions. You know, we always, every generation finds a new icon to worship. You know, oftentimes nowadays it's on social media or, you know, something that we feel that we can make us feel good about ourselves. You know, just an amazing rite by Geronimo and very well done. And what do we got next?
Before all that, thyself, by Bill Schiller. Your hands were made for holding and working plans. With 2 feet, you're granted movement, power to stand, with minds to think and hearts to inspire compassion. Let me speak not of offenses, delivering to death's remand. Let these words remind of work uncompleted. How long will we sit unfeeling, absent-handed? How are we to grow stronger, think only of ourselves? You already know where focus, questions you needn't ask. They want to fix any problem means energy must be put to task. Each person has a talent that brings a new perspective to purpose. For all we blindly paid, we've been betrayed in our purchase. Environmental assaults, gun violence, racial prejudice, you know all of these issues. They're like family Bibles set aside to collect dust on a distant shelf. None can correct any wrong without mustering action in self. Let us not worry more over what's been done. All that matters now is what you're prepared to do when you want alter the world. The alteration must begin with you. End poem.
Great read there, Rep. And what a wonderful write by Bill Schiller. I was really impressed with this one. I actually gave this one the silver. I really felt like it was a strong-voiced write. I like how he speaks up on the idea of individual thought and how we don't necessarily need a Bible or any other book to, though, you know, I'm not opposed to anybody reading the Bible for various reasons, but still the idea of thinking for yourself, of using your gifts to create change in the world. And I really like how he speaks on that. Each person has a talent that brings a new perspective to purpose. For all we've blindly paid, we've been betrayed in our purchase. You know, we have so much to offer up this world. Environmental assault, gun violence, racial prejudice, you know, all of these issues. They're like family Bibles set aside to collect dust on a distant shelf. None can correct any wrong without mustering action in self. You know, it's said that the best Bible to have is the one that has well-worn pages, the one where you've actually read it and gleaned whatever wisdom and guidance that you can get from it. But even with that, reading only means so much if you don't put things into action. If you know the change that says when you alter the world, the alteration must begin with you. That I think there's a Rumi quote that goes along like that, those lines, and I could be wrong. It might not be Rumi, but I know there is a quote that says something along the lines of, in order for change to happen, we must first start with changing yourself. And I'm slightly paraphrasing there, but I thought this was an extremely intelligent and thoughtful write by Bill on, you know, that potential to create change within yourself first and then within the world. So very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
It's the falsity of voice that only manages to rear itself every 2 to 4 years because it is important on a slate, supposed slate that means something, which actually means shite. The idea of seating yourself for the words you actually offer up, but do not live by those words, means you don't believe in the words to begin with. So the idea of what he's got in that second last stanza, the assault, the violence, prejudice, all of that is just a mirage. It's just a talking point to garner your vote because they don't believe in it to begin with, because it's not really an issue until they push it as an issue. And hell, if you're unwilling to actually live by those words, then you know what? Keep it to yourself, because they are not going to make a damn bit of difference in the long roll of things, especially when you've got certain arenas that walk tall in those avenues, and yet the worst still happens in those arenas because you don't believe in it.
I like that. I like that. Very cool. Yeah, you know, and you're right. There's, you know, if you don't believe what you're saying, you just walk around with these empty words, you know, and it means nothing. Empty words, empty promises, nothing backed up with, you know, action to see it through. So. Great observations there, Rex. All right. Was that our last write for the night?
Yep.
Okie dokie, then I will go ahead if you don't mind. Would you like to share anything?
No. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I will go ahead and share a write of mine just to kill some time and get to... this is just a bit of a fun little story write I did. This was a contest ran by James Hatfield, which he still needs to get around to judging. And the prompt was the picture of the guy trying to lick the fan or the electric heater. I'm not sure which. All right. And this is a fork and toaster paradise. When Hugo was a young lad in a land of Americana collectibles, he would often get caught licking the frosting off the cake and sneaking peeks beneath petticoats. Nanny and cook took turns smacking his bums till the flesh blushed like an Arizona sunset. Mumsy was too caught up in tea parties fashion and gossip, and Papa was too busy running for mayor of a Norman Rockwell town with an above-average suicide rate and favors exchanged beneath the table. Hugo grew into a man who was socially awkward with a below-average helping of meat and beans. He was near dumb as a brick, but smart enough to know that cash in the palm made the working gal sing your praises. He still enjoyed a good hard slap on the bum and a harsh reprimand, especially from Dolores, a thick and meaty gal whose breasts jiggled like Christmas pudding on a platter and whose tongue knew all the right ways to rip a man apart. Life was so damn good until the money ran out and his parents refused to bail him out. Being broke in a cash flow town is the equivalent of being lonely, a true ode to misery. He tried making nice with Dolores, but as long as his pocket held only lint and his lucky penny, she was having none of that. Hugo has found the best way to distract from the pain of rejection is to pleasure the rusty blades of an electric fan, moths and dim bulbs singing his praises in a fork and toaster paradise. End poem.
Great, Repent. Fork and toaster paradise. Oh. When you've got nothing left to live for, you might as well talk the toaster and say bye-bye in an electric wave, outshining all the life you had a promise before, because you're just a poor man with nothing left to live for.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Yep. No, I saw this picture, and I pondered on it a few days, and the first thought I had was that, you know what, this looks like a guy whose name is Hugo. And where am I going to go with Hugo? So, yeah, that's just the crazy story I came up with. And I decided he needed a plump lover named Dolores. But, yeah, wonderful. Wonderful show tonight, Rex. Thank you as always. I always appreciate having you with me. I thank you to Hats for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Thank you to Fill My Eyes for everything she does in the background. Please make sure to keep an eye out on the contests and topic boards put up by all our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. You can join us tomorrow or tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. Then we will have Part Sinner, Part Saint with Afasiana and myself at 12:30 a.m. on Saturday. On 10 p.m. on Saturday, we will have Exploring Ekphrasis with Captain B2 and Gray Eye Smith at 12:30 a.m. on Sunday. We will have Once Upon a Time, the History of Rock and Roll with me and Dexter, and hopefully Rex will be joining us, and that's going to be an awesome show. I still have that contest up. Which, you know, has a few spots left where people can share a non-topic right on the topic board. For next week's Break On Through show, I have a contest up, The Art of Georgi Korosov. You might want to check out some of Naomi Sarah's contests. She's got one for The Art of Seduction and two for next week's Twisted Tuesdays. I tell you, we definitely have a great lineup of shows and poetry happening this next couple of weeks. And, of course, I am now going to backtrack to 10 p.m. on Sunday, which is Rhythm and Rhyme, which is your show, Rex. And tell us what you got going on there.
We've got open music.
All right. I will have to track down a music prompt contest and see if I can write for that. And, you know, or dig up something old. But I always love open music. And open music is definitely a great choice because not only do we get a variety of poetry, we get to listen to a variety of music. So very cool. Very cool. Oh, and also I want to mention on Tuesdays after midnight show, we are doing part two of Herman Melville. I am a little short on rights, though, for that. I think I have like 10 or 11 rights. If anybody has a Herman Melville inspired write, or that they want to take a look at the topic board or look at the contest, which is closed, but and look at the quotes put up and see if they have anything that works with that, please feel free to share a write on the topic board. So, as I said, Rex, wonderful show tonight. Thank you, and thank you, everyone. And have a good night. And Rex, anything you'd like to say in closing?
Nope, that's about it.
Sounds good to me. All right, good night.
Good night.